I have this vision of like being at the peak and looking over and seeing Moab and the Red Rocks, and on the other side you see the San Juans, and it's just something about being in those mountains. So I choose most of my races because of the experience that I could have possibly.
Welcome to episode 5 of the Trail Currents podcast. I'm Jamil Curry.
I'm Jubilee Page.
And welcome to the show, where we take a deep dive into topics making waves in the running world. Welcome back, guys. Great to be here. We're on a roll. Another week in a row.
Doing it.
Yeah, we dropped 2 episodes real quick last week. I think we were catching up on some edits, and we wanted to pump a new one out real quick.
We had it. We're ready to go.
And we're back again, so excited. I think the feedback continues to be good.
Yeah.
This week we're doing something maybe a little bit different. It's not a super controversial topic, but I think it's something that applies to a lot of our listeners out there, either from you someday maybe want to do this, or maybe this year you are doing this. And even for those more experienced, maybe you have something to say about this. And that is running your first 100 miler. And that is what you're doing this year, Jubilee.
That's exactly what I'm doing this year. I'm running my first 100 miler.
So this might be a recurring theme as she builds up to her race in August, but we wanted to kick things off and just go over a little bit about what are the quote-unquote experts saying. And then a little anecdotal evidence or discussion from myself. What did I do for my first 100? And now as someone who's run close to 20 100-mile races, maybe what would I have done different? And I think I'd like to hear from you. What are you doing to prepare? And that might help some of our listeners out in the interwebs and on the trails. So that's kind of the basis for today's show, and we're super pumped for it. Before we get into that, we want to do a quick shout out for this week's sponsor. They are back sponsoring us again. This is Splat Sunscreen, and they are a new company founded by some ultra endurance athletes, runners. They're also cyclists, and right now they're cycling down the PCH in California, the Pacific Coast Highway, picking up trash.
Awesome.
And raising awareness. It's really great to see. And they are on Kickstarter right now. So if you guys want to go check them out, we both have supported them now as of this last show. So we're going to be getting our, hopefully be getting our Splat sunscreen when this project is successful.
I'm
so
excited.
They still have about a little over 5,000, I think, to go to reach their goal. And they have 18 days left.
Yeah.
So please, if you guys can go check them out, they make high-quality sunscreen in portable packets that you can take with you about the size of a gel. You can throw it in your pack. And I've, since the last show, because I said I was fried, I've been using sunscreen out of a bottle, and I haven't had to reapply yet because my runs are kind of tapering down as I get ready for my next race. But for those longer days, it's great to throw a packet in your pack.
Yeah.
Just in case, or if you need to reapply.
I'm really proud of you. You're using sunscreen.
I used a little bit, yeah.
That's good.
And fortunately, I haven't peeled from that first experience, so I might be okay. I might not have done a lot of damage. We'll see. I'm keeping an eye on it, but I might have, because I started using the screen, I might have made it. We'll see.
Nice.
So please go check them out. I think that's all we have to say about them. You can also get really other perks along with their Kickstarter for the $55 level. I actually got one of these ahead of time, but this is what I'm showing our viewers on YouTube here is a really nice tumbler coffee mug, and I've already been using this thing.
It is really nice, and I'm really digging the designs. They've got some really cool designs. You can choose either a t-shirt or a tumbler.
So either search Splat Sunscreen on Kickstarter, check out their website, and please support them because they are supporting this show, and that's keeps us going every week. So thank you guys so much.
Cool.
For those of you who are tuning in and you don't know yet, you can get this podcast on several places: YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, and Stitcher currently. So that is where you can download this. And we've been getting a good mix of people on YouTube watching. The biggest comment for people watching on YouTube is they want us to put something over here, like in the background. We have kind of just a blank wall here in
something
our conference
room. Something on the wall for y'all?
We haven't built out our studio 100% here.
Don't know.
So I don't know. Maybe if the viewers have something to send in, we can put it up there on the wall. I don't know.
Yeah. If you guys have comments or what should we put on the wall?
What do you guys want to see? Like posters or,
you know,
bibs? I don't know.
Do you want us to put like your favorite, I don't know, splats design on the wall? You let us know. I would like a wall of beer.
Like beer bottles?
No. Just a wall of beer.
Okay.
Maybe we can just like...
I don't know what that means, but
take one
I'm
down
on board.
And pass it around. And
so like full bottles of beer that you just are ready to drink.
Put some bottles of beer on the wall.
Or maybe a tap. We can just plumb it through to the back there.
I really
the
like the words that are coming out of your mouth. That's right. A great idea. That's fantastic.
I'll get the drill out.
Okay. Here we go.
So let's jump into it. I don't even have an outline for today's show, but I want to talk to Jubilee.
All right.
I want to hear your thoughts. What's going through your mind? How are you training for your first 100-miler? Maybe, I don't know that a lot of the listeners know our backgrounds necessarily, so maybe we can just do a quick overview of our ultra running background.
Okay.
That might be a good place to start so people can kind of hear where we've come from.
Go on.
And then where we're heading.
Okay.
So let's start with you.
Okay. I'm a newbie ultra runner. Did not get into running until I was, 29, almost 30 years old. And I've only been running ultras a year since I ran the first one last year in 2017. And since then, I've run, you know, several 50Ks and just kind of progressively building up. And was convinced to sign up for 100-mile. And in that process, have, like, put other things on my schedule.
So is this one of these experiences where like you've been drinking too much one night and you just, your friend is like, hey, and then you just look at a picture and you're like, yes. And you just go to ultra sign up and just sign up right there.
I don't even think we were drinking. I think it was just a, hey, look at this race. Wouldn't it be awesome? And I agreed. I have this habit of, you know, Jubilee, would you do this? And I say yes, and I don't know what I'm getting myself into until it's already too late. So that's my habit. It's worked out so far. We'll see about it, you know, in a few months when we do the 100-mile. But, you know, misery loves company, and I've actually convinced a majority of the Aravipa staff to also run this race. Along with several people within the community here in Arizona. So, you know, we have a whole tribe that's going up to the Ute 100 in August.
Suffering and misery loves company.
Just all of it. Like, yeah.
That's great. So you guys are running the Ute 100.
Yeah.
Above Moab in the LaSalle Mountains.
I know.
And it's inaugural year.
It is.
Which will be fun.
Everybody says that's a no-no.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say, I'm not going to say that there's going to be things that go wrong, but, you know, there's unknowns for the runners and there's unknowns for the organizer too.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't have everything ironed out. I know a lot of events that we put on for the first year were, were like,
it's exciting.
Sometimes
it's an adventure.
You fly by the seat of your pants a little bit, but it makes it more interesting. I've run a couple inaugural races, the Grand Mesa 100 and the Mogollon Monster, and I expected maybe some course marking stuff,
right,
you know, to go not perfect or aid station. And there was a couple things overall good though. But I going in with that mindset was helpful because I was able to adapt to the situation.
Okay.
I spent a little more time learning the course maps too.
Yeah.
And carrying the descriptions with me.
Yeah.
And that paid huge dividends because I didn't get lost at either. And a lot of people did.
Yeah.
So it's just the fact that, you know, in a lot of races that have been going on, there's a culture and a community of people that learn the course and know it. And a lot of people that have done it before do it again. And they kind of, that all helps everyone find their way.
Right.
But when you have a brand new race, a lot of times only the race director knows the whole thing or the founder of the race. So it takes a little bit of time. Like for us in the Black Canyon race, now it's so great because so many people know the course.
They've run it before,
it's really, really helpful. And you also learn of problematic areas where you need to double up on your course markers and things like that too. So, so you guys have 5 months to train.
Yeah.
Are you or anyone else on the team using a coach or are you just self-coaching?
I think there's a couple of people maybe using a coach. I know of one person at least using a coach. I am not. I don't think I've ever been coached. And I'm a little haphazard in my training. I'm a little just kind of like floopy when it comes to training schedules because I never keep to them. Most of the time I run until I feel good or bad or yeah.
So if you run and feel bad, do you stop?
Not necessarily. I like run. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of over this. So like I'll hike it out or something like that. But it's more like hours on my feet that I train. I don't necessarily go by miles. So I don't wear a watch and I don't track how many miles I do
each
week.
So you have no clue where you're at.
No.
So it's like Courtney DeWalter style because she doesn't track her miles at all.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, it's just kind of a I go and sometimes it's how much time I have available to me. So
are you getting out there every day?
Not every day, but like a good majority. These past few weeks have been really good for me. You know, it's hard as a race director because there are certain races that demand so much time and planning and organizing. It'll like my running will suffer for it.
It's the curse of the race director. I feel it too.
So, you know, and that's like the first year I've really experienced it, that it's really kind of like overwhelmed my running. So running has become like this back burner project. And, you know, luckily I live mobily. So I moved out to, the Bradshaws and like near the Black Canyon Trail, for the past couple of weeks. And since then, I get up in the morning and I'm right there on the trail and I use a couple of horse trails or cow trails to like connect and I just go for an hour or an hour and a half depending on how
That's
much time
so
I
cool.
have.
Just and exploring.
It's exploring.
It's awesome.
Like I feel really good. So like right now I feel really good in my training, but I still don't know if that's where I need to be or if that's sufficient enough because all of February I wasn't running at all. So
that was like the end of last year for me, which I think is okay to have a break. But
yeah,
I think now you can't afford to do that again. Probably.
No.
You got to keep
like,
it going.
You know, in November and December, I pushed hard. I ran two back to back 50Ks and another like half marathon, like between them, like 3 weeks in a row. I ran three races and then suffered a little bit of injury and, you know, then two big races happened and I wasn't running. Ran maybe a little bit in January, but not a lot. So, I mean, I haven't really picked up until this month. And races, I feel like, right down the road and I don't know where I'm at. So, you know, there's a little anxiety that comes with it, but at the same time, like, I'm still committed to it.
Do you have a general plan going forward? That you, like, are you just going to go by feel as you've been, or do you think you're going to set some benchmarks for yourself as you go?
I mean, I have two races in mind. In May, I'm going to Jemez and doing the 50K. It's at elevation. I feel that's a really good prep for it. And then in June, I'm planning to do a 50 mile. In July, I'm doing, hopefully, with the two girls that are actually doing this with me, the U100, we're going to do Soft Rock. So between those three, like, big benchmarks.
Can you explain what Soft Rock is for our listeners that don't know?
Yeah. So Soft Rock is the entire Hard Rock course, but you take your time and fast pack the course and do sections of it instead of doing it all in one one shot.
But you do it over a course of 3 or 4 days.
So we're doing it in 3 days.
3 days. Yep. And you stay in the towns along the way.
Correct.
So you are doing the whole course kind of in a row, but you have... So instead of doing it in 2 days, I guess, during the race continuously,
right.
you do it in three.
Yeah.
And you sleep each night in the towns.
Correct.
That's great.
Yeah.
That seems like a really good way to prep.
I mean...
So you're going to wait until the course is marked?
So until the course is marked, we're going to do it right after... I think the Silverton 1000 and Kendall Mountain
Run, right before Hard Rock.
Right before Hard Rock. So as they're marking it, we're going to go and do it. And, you know, being at elevation, being in the San Juans, it'll mimic a lot of what the Ute has to offer as well, being in the Los Alamos. So I feel really good about that and that plan.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a really smart plan.
Yeah.
Get a couple races. Build some base miles and then
yep.
do some specificity of being up at altitude,
yeah.
being in that kind of environment and terrain. That's great. So let's take a quick look at maybe what are some of the experts saying or some of the top coaches out there. I literally did a Google search for, I think, how to train for 100 miles.
Okay.
And all the top publications came back with some things. So I want to just kind of run through a couple of these. I think it'd be interesting to see maybe what people are doing or talking about. So on Trail Runner Mag, the top article was written by David Roche. And he's a coach. He's also an ultra runner that's been at it for quite a while. He's been running trails since 2012, and he's been running ultra marathons since 2014, but he's yet to step up to the 100-mile distance himself. Not to say you have to run 100 to coach people to do it, but I kind of feel like it's definitely beneficial just to know what that's like. But he is, it looks like he's stepping up to the Lake Sonoma 50 mile, and I might be incorrect, I might be missing a result, but this is what's on Ultra Sign Up, so don't crucify me if I missed a result here from David. But he'll be toeing the line at the Lake Sonoma 50 mile coming up.
Cool.
So there was an article he wrote, How to Train for a 100 mile race, and this was written last year, and he talks about, I think, some of his coaching clients and how they trained, and it looks like he's prescribing definitely a mix of speed work and also long runs and doing some races. So he did, it looks like one of his case study here for his athlete was the Angeles Crest 100.
Mm-hmm.
And his long runs were kind of up and down mixed.
Pretty moderate, really.
Yeah, like 16 weeks out, you know, he's starting out with 16 miles moderate, 20 miles easy. Those are for his long runs.
Yeah.
And some weeks he has him lower because he's got like a 50-mile race 11 weeks out.
Right.
And a 50K race 4 weeks out. And then a 30-miler 3 weeks out, which was easy. So that's kind of, I really like doing that. You know, three weeks out is a really great time to do a last big long run. And I've done multiple things over the years where sometimes it's upwards of 50 miles. 50, like
for the long run. Oh, wow.
3 weeks out. Like I did that before Hard Rock 1 year. I did 57, the first 57. And that's after years of doing 100 milers.
Right.
So it wasn't my first.
Yeah.
Like we could talk about my first in a little bit.
Okay.
And then it looks like, you know, he's prescribing, you know, several runs between 6 and 10 miles a week, and then a workout, so, and some strides. So it looks like his runner Kyle had been averaging between 40 and 60 miles per week.
Yeah.
And he was able to finish under 24 hours. He finished ninth, and had one of the fastest second halves. So it sounds like I don't know if this was Kyle's first 100-mile race or not.
Right.
I'm not sure if it looks like, I'm not, he might have already done, he had done hundreds before. So That's maybe a little bit different than doing your first one. But it's not like you have to be doing 100-mile weeks for sure. And that's my experience. Like, that's definitely not required. But
I mean, I would say I would get injured at this point if I was going to try to push like 100-mile weeks at a consistent level. Like,
I've only done that
just knowing
a couple times in my career where I've strung that together. And the only time I've ever done consistent 100-mile weeks was when I didn't have a race coming up. I was just doing easy miles. It's interesting to read kind of what works for people. But I think a lot of plans that you'll see will center a lot of the training around a couple races or long runs like that. And then, a mix every week of doing a long run, sometimes easy, sometimes moderate, and doing a little speed work, and recovery days are obviously important. Should we jump over to another one?
Yeah.
So David Kiefer wrote one for Runner's World. And this one was from 2016, so 2 years ago. And I couldn't find much information about David Kiefer, actually. Like, nothing really on Ultra Sign Up. But he's giving 10 ways to prepare for 100 miles.
Okay.
So I think he's pulling together some different race directors and some different athletes. And so some of the things, he's pulling in advice from like Sage Cannaday and some other athletes. So, I don't know, a Runner's World article, no offense, is probably a little, it's not going to go a deep dive, but this is something that someone who's thinking about 100 might just pick up and read. So, some things they're saying is staying on your feet. So time on feet is obviously important.
Yeah.
I think you need to build up the different pads in your feet and musculature and calluses and things like that.
Yeah.
So spending a lot of time hiking or just getting out there and getting your body used to being up and moving forward for a long time, because typically you're going to be out there for probably 24 hours or more.
And I mean, I don't think I've been on a trail for 24 hours or more, but like certainly have pushed 12, 13, 14 hours on my feet. And I know that I'm able to do it. But at the same time, like, even pushing, like moving forward, my worry is always pushing the cutoffs. Like, I might be moving forward, but I'm just barely like moving fast enough where I'm going to like make a cutoff. So that's one thing, like right now in my training, like, I worry about that, especially going into a mountain 100, because I don't think that's going to be good enough. So
that's where working on the speed is probably important.
Speed is my, like, one of my anxieties as far as going into training, because I'm not a fast runner.
Yeah. Have you ever trained for speed?
No.
No. Sounds like you might need to visit that.
I know.
Face your fears.
Yeah.
So how did you decide upon the Ute as your race for a first 100? Because typically, I don't know if people would choose that as their first 100.
I mean, I think it's more, I looked at it because, you look at the terrain. I love the mountains. So mountain 100 makes sense for me. I don't like, flat loops. I'm not going to do that for 100 miles. But like looking at the terrain of the LaSalles, every time I go into Moab, I always look at the LaSalles kind of like looming over that valley. And it just fascinates me. I really, really want to run in those mountains. So it's just kind of maybe romantic, I guess, that I almost chose this race because, I have this vision of like being at the peak and looking over and seeing Moab and the Red Rocks. And on the other side, you see the San Juans. And it's just something about being in those mountains. So, I choose most of my races because of the experience that I could have possibly. So that and peer pressure.
Peer pressure too. That's awesome. maybe I'll take a second to talk about my experience, my first 100. Mine was driven, it was the Angeles Crest 100. Yeah. I technically did 100 miles in 24 hours at across the years, but that's a 24-hour race, so I don't really count that.
Yeah.
But I did cover 100 in under 24 previous to it. But I visited the Hard Rock 100 in 2007 after I saw pictures of the 2006 Hard Rock. So just seeing those pictures made me want to do the Hard Rock. Then I went there and I spent 2 weeks course marking and hanging out and doing trail work. And, you know, everyone's asking you, oh, are you in this year? I was like, I'm not even qualified like to even apply. So of course I looked up the requirements and it's like, well, I'm going to run a qualifier like as soon as possible so I can apply for next year's race. So the closest race to me, which was the easiest to get to, was still coming up. Angeles Crest 100 in 2007 in September. That was my first 100. And I don't have a record of my log or anything of what I was running. Yeah. I don't really know. I know that training for my first 50 miler 2 years prior, I was like making goals to run 50 mile weeks. So I was like every day I would try and run 7 miles.
Yeah.
And I would do that 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And
you've told me that before.
And that got me through my race.
Right.
Like I did it. And then, yeah, I honestly couldn't tell you what I did. I don't think it was anything incredible.
Yeah.
It was probably the bare minimum required, like maybe 30 to 40 miles a week. I don't know if I really did any long runs. I might have actually. I think I remember my family. I didn't actually stay through the Hard Rock in 2007. I was there up until like 2 days before the race. That was the year Scott Jurek won, and I was doing trail work with him and like Kyle Skaggs, and then my family went to Rocky Point or something. Like, so we just went to Mexico, and I think me and my brother were doing like 20 miles on the treadmill and just like weird stuff like that. To try and get ready. I know I did the Angeles Crest night training run. We did like the last 25 miles of the course. So I did get a couple long runs in, you know, on the course. We went over there to do trail work. So we were kind of getting a little bit of a feel for the course, but mostly going in blind. And I know one thing is a week before the race, I went on a hiking trip with my friends to this Canyon Narrows that has like spots where you can go cliff jumping, like you jump into the river and it's like really deep. So I was like going there, hanging out, hiking around, jumping in, cliff jumping, all that stuff, you know, fine, all that was good. And then we're like hiking out, and as we were hiking out, after all the dangerous stuff, I like slipped on a little rock and I bashed my knee into the rock like really bad. And it swelled up and it was super painful and I couldn't even walk on it. And so I'm going into this 100-mile race basically with an injury. And I was taking prescription strength ibuprofen or something like that.
Yeah.
Like I had these pills. And so I took one before the race and I took one at mile 25. And so like it would kind of numb out the pain.
Okay.
And I think I forgot to take it at mile 50. And so by the time I got to 75, I was hobbling in.
Oh, God.
And just, I was basically done for. Like, me and my brother were running back and forth. We wanted to get sub 24.
Yeah.
And I think I spent 45 minutes at Chantry Flats aid station. And this is a hard aid station to leave because it's the last time you can see your crew before the finish. Okay. You've been seeing them all day because you crisscross the Highway 2 in the forest up there. My family's there. It's like a party. There's all this food. The lights are on. It's dark, but except so it's like this big oasis in the mountains, and it's so hard to leave.
Yeah.
But my brother was there, and I think he took off ahead of me, and I was like, shit, I got to get going. So I like changed my clothes, took another one of these pills, got out of there. And then I think one of my friends from Phoenix was pacing another runner.
Yeah.
And he gave me an Aleve, which is like another painkiller, obviously. Uh-huh. And that just numbed everything. And all of a sudden I was like charging and running really fast. And I caught my brother before mile 83. They had more ibuprofen at the aid station. He was struggling. And so I was like, here, eat some of these. And I ate more of them. Oh, it was awful. So, and then we were just running like out of our minds. We teamed up. We ran together. It's such a blur. But we got sub 24. We made up like an hour of time on the last 25 miles because we were behind pace.
Yeah.
And we finished with like 12 minutes to spare. And then I think my feet were so swollen that I couldn't put shoes on for 2 weeks. And so I was like going to work wearing sandals. And I didn't run, I think, for 3 months after that. Yeah. Like the, and that, and I've never taken a painkiller again for
I was going to say, did you know like the like dangers almost of taking
No,
that?
I didn't really know anything. I just knew that I normally didn't take that stuff, but I almost didn't care.
Yeah.
And
you just want to get through.
And my knee, I was like, I need to take this because my knee is bum. It's a bum knee, whatever. But at the end of the day, like I pushed so far beyond my training and so far beyond my injury that I just trashed my body. And like, I don't know. I guess it was worth it because I got the sub 24. Right. But, and I didn't fortunately have any other like internal ill effects from taking that stuff, yeah, like kidneys or anything. But, you know, I was like, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to numb the pain so much that I can't feel anything.
Right.
And that I go to that well. If I go to the well that deep and I can feel it and I choose to push through it,
yeah,
great. But it won't be artificial.
Do you think that you also kind of pushed maybe because like your brother was there and like your family was there?
We wanted that buckle.
Yeah.
That silver buckle. We wanted that thing. I mean, we didn't have to do sub 24 for Hard Rock, but it wasn't just about that for us. It was like we wanted to see what we could do. And I know I didn't train enough. I did not put the requisite time and long runs and all these things that are talking about these articles.
Yeah.
I didn't do that stuff. But I had the heart. Like I knew I wanted to finish and I had the freaking heart. And my brother did too, obviously.
Yeah.
And we linked up and it was like one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had. Like they talk about that flow state when you just, I don't know. We just, like I said, our bodies were just like, we just willed them to do it. And that's all I know.
But I mean, it helped that you had somebody that you knew and that you were kind of like pushing your body with. Like
we were
you
pushing
had,
together.
You had somebody to run with almost. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, at least like I have people.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still like, you know, it's
oh, yeah. And we
it's
had
still
a
daunting. It's,
we did have a supportive crew. So we pulled together a solid crew. And I think that's an important part. I don't know. I wanted to tell that story. It's super fun.
You learned a lot.
Yeah. And it was just, it's such a memorable experience. Like, I don't know. And maybe that's true for everyone who runs 100. I think the first time you go to that distance, because if you've never done it, you maybe don't quite know what I'm talking about. But the highs and lows you experience in a 100-mile race, it's like nothing else that I've found. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I love being so dejected and broken and like feeling awful.
Yeah.
But then turning it around and then feeling great and flying and running fast, or just the fact that you're moving forward and still standing at mile 80, like it's mind-boggling. You can't wrap your head around running this far or traveling this far. It's impossible to think about like all in one go. So it's just such a crazy thing. And maybe people throw it around so casually sometimes, but it's, to me, it's a really special experience, and it's not something you can experience in a 50-mile race or even a 100K race. Yeah. It's the 100-mile is different because it's that whole cycle of you're going through a whole day and a night and into the next day usually, and it's just so far that it is literally like Billy Yang's film, Life in a Day.
Yeah.
It's the highs and lows, and the lows don't always last. Usually, I like the phrase, like life exists on a curve, like running 100 milers exists on a curve, meaning just as the steepest part of that low, as you're dropping into that, it's at some point it will level out.
Yeah.
And it will become less bad, and it will probably even start to get better. And yeah, it might get better quickly, but you have to get through that low point to get back to that high point. And you have to experience the low point to know what the high point is.
Yeah.
And that high point might come at mile 90, and then it'll be really high at the finish. So, but you have to stick it out to find that. I don't know.
I mean, that's what's, I think, been really inspiring, because at Hard Rock, I see, like, documenting the race the past couple of years, I've seen, you know, competitors and women who are in their lowest part. Like, they are in their lowest of lows, and it looks like on the edge of just complete annihilation. Like, they are done. And they say out loud, I'm done. And in a moment, like after they've experienced it, there's a little bit of life. There's a little bit of something that, like, all of a sudden, oh, okay, I can eat a little bit of avocado and, oh, that tastes good. And then they can sit up. And then after sitting up, they're like, okay, I think I can go 10 more miles. Like, it's unbelievable in a second. Like, that's... like, witnessing that is something really incredible and really special. And I don't know why, but I really want to experience that as well. As daunting as it is, and knowing that, you know, this is what I can expect, I'm still, I really want to do it. So,
that's one of
that's what's been inspiring to me.
That's one of the tips that actually Ian Torrance gave in one of the articles, was breaking it up and going aid station to aid station. Yeah. It said in the article he wanted to quit at mile 50 of his 100-mile race.
Yeah.
And he just worked aid station to aid station. And that's kind of a tried and true piece of philosophy or wisdom in the sport.
Yeah.
Is break it down and don't think about the finish that's 40 miles away.
Right.
Think about the aid station that's 4 miles away.
Yeah.
Because that's more achievable. And the beauty of it is that you might... by the end of that 4 miles, have a turnaround. You know, maybe you just needed to walk it out for 4 miles and that, you know, bit of nausea goes away, or, you know, maybe you ate a little too much and that needs to digest a little bit. And now you have energy in your bloodstream again. Yeah. Like, a lot of times there's a problem and it needs to be solved. And maybe that's the passage of time sitting in an aid station or clearing the system out and just, maybe sometimes I've overdone it with salts or something, and you have to just stop eating and drinking for a bit and let that clear out. So you have to troubleshoot, and that's a lot of times what it's about. And I think, you know, 100 milers, part of it is obviously physical, and it's a big part of it, but it's more mental, because, I mean, the training required for a 100 miler, it's obviously a bit more than a marathon, but I think most people that have trained for a marathon, if they, you know, added a couple more long runs and maybe did a 50-mile race in prep, they could finish 100 miles under the cutoffs. So a big part of it is the mental part of it, and that's some of that comes with just you want it that bad, and sometimes that comes with experience or wisdom or just maybe reading or talking to people and just following what they say, meaning, okay, if it's really low and hard, figure out what the problem is, try and troubleshoot it and give it some time and keep walking forward. Keep making that forward progress, because you can work through those things. And also, one thing I've found in hundreds, and they haven't all been successful and great and easy. One of the toughest ones, the Umstead 100, I went out really fast, really hard. And by mile 25, I was hurting a lot. And
by
I felt...
mile 25?
Yeah. I ran really hard the first 2 laps. It's an 8-lap race.
Oh.
And it's really runnable. So yeah. I ran hard the first 2 laps. And I felt like I was at mile 80. And so I just had to live in that space. But I continued on. And the next 50 miles, they all felt like I was at mile 80, but it didn't get worse than that.
Yeah.
It was a long time to be in that space. It wasn't fun. It was mentally taxing, but I just kept moving forward. And by the time I hit the last 25 miles, you know, I could see the light at the end of the tunnel and I could feel the pull of the finish, and it kind of, the pain just kind of numbed away. And I think I felt better there than I did earlier. And I was still running pretty strong at the end, regardless of the fact that I was in a lot of pain. And I still finished in, I think, 18 hours or something. So, yeah. We have an article here in Ultra Running Magazine. This is from Gary Dudney, and this guy is experienced. He ran his first 100-miler, the Angeles Crest 100, near and dear to my heart, at age 44 in 1997.
Cool.
And he was like a 30-hour, 45-minute finish there. And prior to that, let's see, 93, he ran the Quicksilver 50-mile and the American River 50-mile in 1994, so he's been at it for a long time. And most recently, well, he's going to be running the Fort Clinch 100 a week from Saturday. And he just did the Way Too Cool 50K, actually.
Oh,
so
nice.
He's still doing this. He ran a 100-miler, looks like last year in October. So, and even he ran a bunch of hundreds last year, actually. So this guy's got a lot of experience. So he wrote an article for Ultra Running Magazine, and this was back from 2013, but obviously still applicable. So he's kind of talking about, you know, obviously the physical demands are substantial in a 100-mile race, but also obviously the mental aspect as well. You know, he's saying you should probably be doing 50 miles a week, typical for most runners that want to do their first 100 under the, that's a good baseline. And I would agree with that overall.
Okay.
You know, 50 miles per week, it's probably a good place to do it. He says forego the junk miles, if you can keep up the steady stream of long runs. So I guess, you know, maybe a little bit more, emphasis on your long runs. I think, yeah, you'd rather probably forego the extra miles midweek to make sure you're getting your long runs in.
Got
I would
it.
Probably agree with that, okay, as well. Because those are really the bread and butter, I think, of a training program. The overall mileage is still important. Also doing a race ahead of time. And that can be, obviously, I think that's super important. And I think most coaches and people that have done 100 would tell you that's important, because it gives you a chance to stress your body in a way above and beyond your training. And also doing it in a race environment can give you a chance to test some of your equipment and your pacing strategy, and just kind of get into a low place and go through that and figure that out. I think that's important. There's also, he talks a little bit about the mental component. This is kind of a great little saying: you run the first half of 100 with your legs and the last half with your mind.
Okay.
That's pretty true.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's, you're going to hurt after mile 50, pretty much no matter what, no matter who you are. And just knowing that, and knowing that you want to finish, and that, you know, the pain, you'll forget the pain in a few days probably, or a couple weeks, but like I don't feel the pain now that I felt then, but
you remember that it hurt, but you just
exactly. He's also saying repeating a mantra that will replace negative thoughts with positive motivating phrases. I like that. That's pretty cool. I feel like mine for Barkley coming up, because I'm going to be in some pretty interesting places coming up pretty soon. People were saying run steep, get five, which is a saying, get five loops.
Nice.
So maybe that'll be my, when I'm ever feeling any doubts, run steep, get five. So that'll be my positive affirmation.
That's a good one.
Let's talk about crews and logistics a little bit. Like,
Yeah.
Have you thought about that at all? That's an important part of the puzzle, I think, especially for your first one.
Yeah.
Having the support structure, you know, your planning. The last thing you want is, you know, not to have your flashlight in the right bin or your crew members getting lost or just being out there alone with no support. Like I had said, I had, you know, my closest people in my life were there supporting me at my first 100. My parents were both there. I didn't have a pacer,
yeah,
but my brother was in the race and we ended up kind of pacing each other at the end, which was cool.
Yeah.
And actually looking back on it, it's kind of funny because it was a bit of a risk because we had one vehicle for the whole family traveling to California, two runners, two people crewing, but in the same vehicle. So if at any point in time
you weren't together,
we got too far apart, like one of us would, they'd have to choose, I guess, who would be serviced. But we were so close all day and we kind of went back and forth that it worked out pretty well, which I think was pretty funny. So, what's your plan? I mean, you've seen a lot of people running hundreds, so you kind of have an idea of what someone would do, but walk me through currently what you're thinking. I know you have 5 months, but what is going through your mind? What's your ideal situation with the crew and the gear and all that kind of stuff?
I mean, ideally, right now, so the special thing about Ute 100 is because there's so many remote stations, and because of these stations are they're farther apart than most aid stations, so they're anywhere from like 8 to 10 miles apart, which is pretty long, I think, in an ultra race. But there are crew access at several places, and then what they call safety runners, which is your pacer, and they allow safety runners at mile like 15 or 20.
Mile 15?
Yeah, like super really early. Really early in the race.
Normally it's maybe mile 40, but a lot of times mile 50 or 60.
Yeah, so this is like super early in the race. You're allowed someone to run with, and you know, being a part of the ultra community, there's some good people that I might be able to ask to come out to Utah with me. I've asked my brother actually to be one of my pacers, and I think, you know, I hope that he will say yes. He runs quite a bit actually, and he runs competitively on these mountains. He's chasing some of your records actually. It's really fun.
What?
I know. Wait a minute. I know.
My Strava records?
A little bit. Yeah. He's coming after you.
I don't think I have that many.
Well.
I need to get some more.
I think there's a couple that he showed me that he was close to Jim Walmsley and just above you, possibly.
Probably. I don't have many crowns on Strava, but maybe after Barkley's over, I can snipe some from some people. Jess here in the office, he's got a ton of them.
Yeah.
And I got to take that guy down.
Jeremiah's already like going after Jess too. Wow.
That's great.
He like sees like some of the like crazy routes that you guys do, and he's like, I'm going to do that. So
that's awesome.
I mean, it's really cool. So, I mean, he's going, not only like is he strong uphill, like he's fast downhill. And he's just a positive dude, like overall. And, can pretty much push me to do anything. And
that's great.
So like he's kind of like the person that I want in my corner when I'm feeling really low. And if I'm like fortunate enough to be like in the back half of the 100, you know, mile 75, 80, whatever, he's the dude that I want pushing me to go on and complete it. So that's my ideal plan, I guess.
How far do you think he would go with you, or would you have other people joining you as well?
I mean, I would like to have other people join me as well. I don't think I can get him to commit more than 20 miles, and I don't think I would want him to do that. You know,
I mean, if you're going 85, you might as well run the whole race, right?
Right.
If you're starting at mile 15.
No, there's a couple of people that I have in mind that I would like to employ to come with me and just, you know, experience it if they want to. I mean, otherwise, you know, we have a really good team. And I've, you know, Sophia is she's our graphic designer here at Aero Viper Running, and this is going to be her first 100 as well. And her and I have kind of shared our anxieties and our worries and our we're going to train here and there and do this together and let's just slog out the whole race together, because, you know, it's just kind of a confidence build. So, you know, I would love it if just we could stick it out. But I think she'll be stronger than I am, honestly. So I don't know.
One other thing that we have here in this article from Gary, which I think is really cool. He talks about before he ran his first 100, he asked a 100-mile veteran. So this was back in the early 90s. He was asking someone this, how he got through the second half of the race, which is the most taxing for sure. So he looked at him and smiled. The second 50, oh, that's all Zen. That's cool.
That's really important. I mean, most of anybody that I've talked to will say that, you know, in that last half when you feel like your body is done, like, it's all mental. It's the biggest aspect of, like, when your body is done, for whatever reason, if your mind is still strong enough, you'll push forward. So, I mean, if it's Zen, that's awesome. But at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah, he says the concepts of meditation, simplicity, direct experience, and enlightenment apply to those soul-searching miles during the last half of 100. I think maybe that's a little bit of what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Because I really have felt something special in a lot of those miles that I feel it in other long efforts too, but especially there, you have to dig deep within yourself. And it's something that it just doesn't, like I say, it doesn't happen in like everyday life when you just go to the office and then do your run out there. It's a special thing. So shout out to Gary for those articles. He's run over 200 ultras, it says in his bio down here, which is...
And he's a native of Kansas, so he's in good company. Bam. What? Kansas.
I was going to say something next. I forget what it is. No idea. We've also got an article here from Jason Koop on competitor running. So we're running the gamut of all these... Jason Koop, as I think a lot of you guys know, he's a coach for Carmichael Training Systems, CTS, extremely experienced ultra runner himself. He started trail running, it looks like, age 23, back at the Imogene Pass Run in the San Juans in 2002.
There
you go. Towed the line of his first 100-mile race in 2008, the Leadville Trail 100. He placed 13th. Oh. So he's a competitive athlete. He's also done, I mean, pretty much all the top races, Wasatch, Western States, Hard Rock, Badwater, Zangre. He's done multiple Hard Rock Leadville Wasatches over the years. So he's second at the Zion 100. So he's got a ton of experience. He's coached a lot of athletes. And he says in this article from July 2017, almost any runner can finish a 100-mile ultramarathon. Let's see what he has to say.
Okay.
He says, one of the biggest things is preventing the negative and also preventing time spent at 0 miles per hour. That's a cool thing to think about. Because even just walking at 2 miles an hour, like you're gonna get forward progress going. Right. If you're eating and walking, you're making your way towards that finish line. And even if you're slow for an hour or two at that pace, you'll probably work through whatever low you're at.
There's still forward progress.
And you've covered a couple miles and now you're starting to jog again.
Yeah.
And you're starting to run again. So I think it's super important. So, I mean, one thing he's saying is like, he's getting a little scientific, but, it says the preferred walking speed for the average human is 19 minutes per mile. He writes about that in this article. So meaning most people who are trained, like let's say you're just running 50 miles a week, like you probably hike 3 miles an hour, like sustainably for a long time.
Yeah.
And like that would yield you, for instance, you do the math and it's like 3 miles an hour for 30 hours, pretty close to 100 miles. And that's a lot of times what the cutoff is for 100 miles, is right around 30 hours. So you do slightly better than that and you're like 18, 19 miles an hour. Of course, that's on paper and that's easy to say.
That's the thing. There's so many things.
What is the cutoff for the Ute 100?
I want to say it's 34 or 36 hours.
34. That seems tight for a race. But it's that race doesn't have a crazy amount of climbing, correct?
No. Yeah.
I think he said it's not like the most climbing of any race, but
not a lot of climbing. There's a really like,
not saying that there's aspects that are hard and high altitude.
You're going to hit like the highest point, I think around like mile 40. And then there's just a long downhill, and then it kind of like between like mile 5 and 30, like it's pretty even. And then between miles 70 and 100 is pretty even. So, I mean, not, but it's all at elevation too. So you kind of have to think like the average elevation is also going to be above 9,000 feet, which is a huge factor as well. But I want to say like the cutoff is around 30.
So it says 18,000 feet of climb approximately and same amount of descent is what they're saying on their website. 3 a.m. race start.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
40-hour time limit.
And oh, okay.
So you got 40 hours.
40 hours.
That's nice. So that's like, what, two and a half miles an hour?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think so.
That's just a quick math with drinking some beer. So I don't know. Yeah. That's beer math.
You're
for
probably
you.
Way ahead of me. Yeah. And the reason he said 3 a.m. Start was because it's at elevation and because it's so high in the mountains, you're going to hit that highest peak probably around the time of those afternoon like storms and showers that are like guaranteed during that time, especially in that time of year.
So he purposefully put you on top when the showers
No.
Or
like,
he's avoiding it?
Avoiding it.
Oh, okay, cool.
So like right as people are like getting down off the mountain is when those storms should be starting.
So he's trying to get people through there first.
Right. Gotcha. So avoiding like the hazards like lightning and things like that. I'm putting my pace like I'm peaking right at the top during that storm. That's why I got to get faster, man. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun.
This article seems like it's not as long as I thought it would be, but...
Oh, it's not.
It's a very short article, so take all this... That's why we're doing a long-form podcast about this, because there's a lot more to say.
There's good things to take out of each one of the articles, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of, like, do's and don'ts that we've kind of gone over, you know, scanning like prior to this conversation. You know, it's like don't just jump into 100 and don't run 100 outside of the terrain that you know.
Oh, and that's what I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about specificity. I like that. It's just a fun word to say.
Specificity. It's fun that I can still say that after a good strong beer. It's fun.
I mean, that's obviously important. So, you know, hey, look at the elevation profile of the event you're running and try and look at some pictures
and
see what the terrain's like. Are you running in a lot of sand or is it just a wide road?
Right.
Is it crazy technical mountain terrain?
Right.
You don't have to do all of your training on something like that, but you should do some long runs on something similar to the course or the elevation profile or the altitude or the temperature if you can get into it. If you're doing a hot race, when they moved Angeles Crest into August 1 year, well, they moved it since the first year I ran it and then I ran it a couple more times. So the race went from being in middle of September in the fall when it was nice to early August and the canyons are triple digit temperatures. So when I come back from Colorado and I'm last couple weeks when I'm getting ready for Angeles Crest, I'm out there working outside, putting on my hoodie sweatshirt, and I'm training in the afternoons when it's 115 in Phoenix with four water bottles. When I get ready for the Barkley, I'm doing repeats up and down mountains at 1,200 feet per mile slopes, and up and down, and repeats, up little up and downs of 1,200 feet at a time, which mimics that type of course.
Right.
If I'm doing hard rock, I'm going up there early if I can get there, which fortunately I've been able to do quite a few times.
That
and I'm, you know, acclimating to the altitude, and I'm getting on the course or doing things that are similar to it. So I think, you know, for you heading into, you know, your first 100 miler isn't the Javelina 100.
Yeah.
So you're not doing loops on the Pemberton Trail or,
right,
or, you know, making sure you can run. If you're doing the Leadville 100, I would recommend you would do like a lot of road running even, or flat runs, and do, and then a couple power hikes. You know, it's a mix, but you got to be able to run that race. Whereas, right, you know, and I need to dive a little bit more into the Ute 100 for you. I mean, there's no race reports yet, but it seems like,
yeah,
you know, you're,
there's a good, well, that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of, single track that I can see, or that, has been kind of described. A majority of it's a lot of single track, various terrain, a lot of like good climbing, but not like crazy, like scree or anything like that.
I think doing soft rock is really good, but I think, yeah, before you do that, and even a little bit after, like, I mean, before, do some running too,
yeah,
you know, I would in focus on faster, just because you will get the specificity of the hiking, but you also want to be able to, like you said,
yeah,
make sure you're not pushing those cutoffs as well. Cause you're, I not going to be doing speed at heart at soft rock.
By no means. No, I think that's just a good like 30 mile a day hike that we're going out. And those mountains will teach us something, you know, that we don't necessarily, I mean, 40, have to run them.
You do have 40 hours. That's a good amount of time. So
it is.
If you can see what kind of pace that is, and if you can do that out in the San Juans, I think that that's going to, yeah, be really good for you. But yeah, I think, yeah, definitely some getting used to the, I always like that, is getting used to the faster pace too. I found that to be pretty beneficial.
I mean, where I struggle is anything really, really flat. Like, I can power hike an uphill. I'm really good on mountains. You know, downhill, I can jog down or even just kind of let myself go. I'm okay. But if it's just a really long, flat section, I find that every single time I lose momentum.
Is it like a mental thing where you just kind of like, it's exhausting to think about continuing, or?
Maybe a little bit. It's just like, I don't know if like I convinced that my legs aren't like, I don't know, like they're just not built up enough to just kind of continue on like a straight flat course. Like maybe that's why I've never really taken to road running too, because I just don't like flat roads.
I feel like you would benefit from finding a way,
yeah,
to work on that, whether it's, I don't know,
like
even going to the Black Canyon Trail, a flatter section maybe when you're out there, or like,
I mean,
running.
Right now, like all the Black Canyon Trail that I'm doing is all like rolling and it's a lot of fun, and like, you know, you
rolling
get this,
running is good though, I think, but
yeah,
maybe even trying, I don't know. Maybe that's good enough.
If, yeah,
as long as you're running harder on the flatter stuff, if it's even rolling, like trying to run through the dips. And like,
that's the thing. Like,
if
you
can run through the dips
down
and like
faster through the
and
dips,
then crest
and like,
through the next uphill.
Yeah.
But you might even benefit from like, I'm going to figure this struggle out, and I'm going to try and train my mind. It sounds like it's a mind thing more,
yeah,
than even a body, but that will come, I think, if you train for it. But you know, maybe go to the canal, like as boring,
ugh,
as it may sound.
That sounds terrible.
And
yeah,
just be like, all right, I'm going to start out and I'm just going to run for 30 seconds and then I'm going to walk for 30 seconds and like do that a bunch of repeats for like 20 minutes. And then see how that goes. And then maybe try 45 seconds next time and then all try right. a minute and until you can build up and you can go like a mile at a time.
Yeah.
Running the whole way on a flat. And just mentally, I think, so you have that experience and you have that confidence. Because right now you don't have confidence in your flat running.
I don't.
And I think you would benefit from building that up, I think, and just starting slow. I don't know. I think that could be good. Because right. if you hit like a, I don't know if there's dirt roads out there. If you hit like a flat dirt road out at the Ute.
Yeah.
And you just, oh, I can't run this. It might help.
It just crushes me every time. Like, and I've done that like at other races, you know, I have so much fun on the ups and then like, you know, just kind of la-di-da down like on the downs and like making sure I have my footing. But if I run into a road, I'm just like, okay, like, where's the next single track?
So I've struggled lately with my uphill running.
Yeah.
I used to be in really good shape back years ago where I could run every step of my runs, even with multiple 1,000-foot climbs up steep trails. I could run every single step. This is when I was living by South Mountain and I was doing 100-mile weeks and stuff. And I trained my body up so I could easily just run up a steep climb. And now I fall into the hike. And that was like, you know, obviously a baseline level that I established for myself was running up these climbs. But for the last couple of years, I've never gotten really in good enough shape where I could run up any climb of any significant distance. I always just like, oh, I'll just, you know, it's a climb, I can walk it. But today on my run, I was running up Shaw Butte here by the office and, you know, I was hiking for a while. And then it kind of goes up and then it flattens out halfway through and then it's kind of goes up again, mm-hmm. but not as steep. And I was running the flat, just jogging along, and I just started like, I kept running as it was getting steeper.
And like that really super steep section? Like, no.
It was the roadside of,
oh, okay.
of Shaw Butte.
Yep.
Because I had gone over and then back.
Got it.
And as I was going up, I was like able to still run. And my legs were just going. And I was like, huh, this is cool. Because I'm kind of getting in better good. Shape right now. Yeah. And I was like, maybe I can run to that next tree. You know, and I kind of ran and it flattens out one more time and then it goes up again. And I was like, this doesn't feel so bad. And I ran all the way to the top.
That's
and
awesome.
it was a really good feeling to kind of reach that level again where I was like,
yeah,
I'm kind of getting in shape where I could maybe run climbs again. And that's kind of exciting. So I'm putting out the challenge, though.
OK,
I want you to run, learn to run the flats.
All right.
Run flat, stay low.
Oh, God.
For life.
Forget it. Stop it. All right. And I mean, it'll probably help me with my speed as well, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because once you can, the first step, if you can't even or don't even want to run flats at all, how are you going to work on your speed?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times speed work is done on flatter or flat trails.
I mean, it's not really fair if I only run downhills. Like, yeah. Just gotta let gravity just take me down. Like, I got really fast, guys.
And I never did a lot of speed work until I started working with a coach, Ian Torrance.
Yeah.
And he had me working on speed again. And I found that I really loved it once I did it again. Because it kind of forces you to get your form in really good shape. Yeah. And just the feeling of pushing your body beyond what's comfortable, there's a satisfaction with that. Just like there's a satisfaction with finishing an ultra marathon or anything that wherever your level is. If you're out there listening and you're training for your first trail half marathon or you're just whatever your first marathon, reaching that next level is incredibly rewarding. So
yeah, 85% single track on this race. 85% runnable.
But that 15% on the roads, that's where you can make up time and yeah. you can have confidence that, okay, I can move well on that and stay clear of that 40 hours.
Yeah.
Right?
40 hours. Really doing it, guys.
So you can pick up your first safety runner at mile 26.4. It says here on the website for the race that you're doing.
Yeah.
So sounds like I'm going to be jumping in with someone at mile 26.4.
Wait, where are you at on the website? Because I'm
the race information.
Oh.
There's.
Because yeah. I'm on the crew information.
Yeah, the race information and stuff. There's no personal pets at the Mount Peel Animal Sanctuary. I don't know what that is, but it's a big section here.
Sorry, Fox.
It's also a drug-free zone.
Well, all right.
Let's talk about the beer that we are drinking tonight.
Sure.
Quick. You want to give us, enlighten the listeners and viewers out there?
Because
I just polished mine off.
Brainless on Cherries, that actually comes from Epic Brewing in Salt Lake, Utah. So we're drinking the Utah beer.
It also says, and Denver. So where and is this Denver. Really?
This actually, I bought this in Salt Lake City in Utah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. This is brewed with cherries and aged in oak barrels.
Yeah.
French oak barrels.
Oh.
10% alcohol. That's why we're splitting this one. Thank you very much.
It's a really tart. It's really, if you guys get a chance to drink this, there's Brainless on Cherries and Brainless on Peaches. Try them out. It's actually really pretty good. It's hard to find liquor in Salt Lake. I believe when I was with Christina Pham, we like went 30 or 40 minutes out of our way to go and find a liquor store that like could get a decent beer. So here it is.
What else should we talk about here with 100-mile races? Do you have any questions for me about my experiences or things in your mind that you're still mulling over? I mean, you have some time, obviously.
I know I have time, but at the same time, like, 5 months, that's the thing. Like, it's, you know, when I signed up for the race, I signed up for the race when Haley and I were editing Hard Rock. So we were editing the Women of Hard Rock, and we were so inspired by these women. We're like, oh my gosh, they're amazing. And she just happened to find Ute 100 and let's sign up before it sells out. And I'm like, oh, I've always wanted to run the LaSalle's. It looks amazing. Absolutely. Let's do it. 100%. Yes. In like, and that happened within like 15 minutes of her suggesting.
And you're just like, what just happened?
And then I signed up and then we text everybody. We're like, sign up for this race now. So we're not alone. And it worked out, you know. But at the same time, like, oh, that was in August. And I was like, I have a year. And 7 months has gone by. And now I have 5 months.
Well, you've done a couple 50Ks in the fall. You've taken a little break. So your injuries are gone.
My injuries are gone. Like, okay. My foot feels good.
So great. That's good.
Yeah.
You've gotten through a couple big races already this year for race directing, ATY and Black Canyon, so
that was huge.
I mean, obviously Whiskey Basin's coming up, but
yeah.
But I mean, sounds actually, like you're in a better position.
I feel
right now
in a much better position for like Crown King and Whiskey Basin. And like even, you know, I thought the training runs and like would absorb my time for running and what, but like that actually has not stressed me out. And like I go out the next day and I, you know, put some miles on the trail and actually don't know if I put a lot of miles on the trail because I just go out.
Have you thought about tracking
for
anything?
Like an hour.
Or does that not really interest you?
So, like tracking, like wearing a watch?
Yeah, like tracking or, you know, having a rough idea of like, well, how many hours am I doing? Or try and maybe you don't want to wear a watch, but you can like figure out how many miles you're doing.
So, like if I go on like a long hike, you know, that's anywhere from like 6 to 8 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So I, you know, but that's a slow hike, where I'm enjoying it. I'm taking a lot of photos and doing all that stuff.
So it's not exactly, you know, 3 miles an hour, which is probably the pace you need to be going.
Probably not. Like I dilly-dally.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite a bit. But I mean, I also count it as just, it's time on feet and I'm moving forward. So, but if I'm running and I'm like for the last couple of weeks, you know, it's, I get up and it's almost right at sunrise and it's really pretty out in the Bradshaws because everything's pink and pretty. And so, you know, where I'm parked, I'm right there off the trail. Like, I'm right there off a cow trail. And, like, you dip down into the mesa and it connects to the road. And then I can connect to the BCT if I want to. So, you know, if I have time, like, anywhere from an hour into an hour and a half before I, like, head back and, like, drive in to Phoenix. But I haven't actually tracked how many miles I'm doing every time. Based on my pace, I'm probably not, like...
Are you just opposed to the idea of wearing a watch?
No, it's... I'm weird with watches because I've worn a watch before and I'm one of those people that if I'm wearing a watch, because I wore a watch like on my first, I remember it for Old Pueblo last year. And at Old Pueblo, I wore a Garmin and I checked that watch all the time.
So you're not running free and just focusing on the run. You're obsessed with the stats and all that.
No, not necessarily the stats, but I was obsessed with my pace and I was obsessed with the miles and like, oh my gosh, I'm running too fast or oh my gosh, I'm not running fast enough. And every mile I felt stressed because my watch wasn't where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I let that go and stopped wearing a watch, you know, I just kind of felt good about my running. Like, I wasn't stressed about it. So I don't worry about my pace. Like, if I'm, you know, if I get 4, 5, 6 miles within, like, an hour and a half, okay, great. I don't confirm that, but, you know, kind of based on my past pace, like, that's probably where I would be.
Yeah. I don't think it's requirement that you have to track your miles. I think if you're getting out there and you just feel like you're doing enough,
that I mean, works. You know, like I feel good and I feel strong like at the end of my runs. There are some mornings where I wake up and I'm like, and like getting going is really tough for me. And like, yeah, like sometimes I just like I've had a cold the past like week and there are a couple days where I'm just like, no, I don't want to run. I feel like crud.
I mean, it sounds like if you have these longer races and efforts coming up in May and June and then Soft Rock, and if you get to the point where you're getting in shape for those and able to finish those races, and I think you're going to be good.
I mean, mentally, I know that I can get through a 50K. Even... You know, I feel pretty comfortable at elevation when I run, and I should probably be doing more. Like, I'd like to go out and to, like, Pine and the Mogollon Rim to just mimic some of that, like, really rough terrain that I might find at Jemez. But, and, like, even the elevation there. But, I mean, yeah, I feel pretty strong, but at the same time, like, I know, like, just the distance alone and, like, the training ahead of me, I don't know if I have enough time.
It should feel significant, for sure.
Like, it feels, like, it's really daunting.
You have time.
I think you do
have time.
Yeah.
But just, I don't know. Or maybe if you have, like, a loop that you go to up there, maybe track it once and just see how far it is so you can kind of see where
you're
at.
You know, somebody has told me, like, to put, like, a piece of tape over a watch and still wear it. But I know that I'm just weird enough that, like, somewhere mid-run, I'm going to peel off the tape and be like, oh, my gosh, I'm not going fast enough or something. Yeah. So, like, I mean, does it work if I, like, put a watch and, like, start it and put it in my pack and go?
Yeah.
It still tracks it?
Yeah, it would track for sure. Or, like, attaching it to the back of your pack or something. Yeah. It'll probably connect. And I was just saying, like, if wherever you're stationed, if you have, like, a go-to weekday loop you do, like, maybe just pop the watch in your pack once, see how far it is.
Yeah.
Just so you have maybe a rough idea.
There is a little bit of road that I run.
There you go.
But it's also uphill. So.
That's the part to run.
Is it?
I don't know.
Arrogant.
Which run are you doing in June? Or do you not want to say?
I can't actually remember the name of it because it's in Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's like Mary's Mountain or St. Mary's Mountain, or that's probably not right.
50 miler though.
It's a 50 miler, and I mean, it's beautiful. It has good.
So are you doing, how many of these runs are you doing with other staff members at Aravaipa?
All of them.
They're all doing all of them. So you, Haley, Sophia, and Noah?
No, so like
Noah's the odd man out.
Noah's the odd man out. He's a race director. He's got other things. He's got other commitments. So he's doing definitely the Ute 100 with us. But like Sophia and I have committed to the Jemez and possibly Mary's and Ute and Soft Rock. And then Haley's in there for possibly all except for Jemez.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds like you got some training partners, and that's
that helps. Yeah. I mean, it's nice to know that you've got somebody there.
My first one, I knew my brother was going to be out there, right. And we ran together quite a bit, and it was encouraging to have someone out there that was experiencing the same thing for the first time with me.
Yeah.
So Sophia will be doing her first 100 as well.
Yeah.
I know you're listening, Sophia. You can do this.
She's so strong, dude. Like, you know, like, I've been on the trail with her, and, like, she's so much, and she's even faster. She's so fast. She's much faster than I am. Like,
she's got all the marathon training.
Well, that's the thing. Like, she does, like, all of these half marathons, and, you know, she's worried about maybe the distance, but, you know, doing even, like, 50K, but I'm telling you, she's going to crush it because, yeah, she's really strong. I've seen her run, and... like, even my dog is stronger than me, I swear it. Like, this dog can crush some miles.
Totally cool. I think that's about all we have. But I would encourage anyone who's out there as a listener of the show, pop a comment or send us a message. If you're building up to your first 100, or if you're a listener and you've run hundreds, maybe you have some tips for the other listeners out there, because we will be...
You have tips for me. Throw them my way.
Yeah, tips for Jubilee. Is she wrong for not tracking her miles? Like, is that the wrong move?
Am I doing everything wrong for my 100? Let me know.
Should she do... I don't know. Let's just hear what you got
to
say.
I mean, I'm not guaranteed I'm going to listen to anybody, but, you know, let me know.
So this was just a little bit about our experiences, mine as someone who's done a few of these races, and Jubilee, who's working towards her first. So we've got a couple perspectives. We're going to follow up on this.
I'm really excited.
The show goes forward. We're excited. Yeah. I'm planning to be out there to support the team. That's currently the plan.
I mean, that's part of, like, the whole, like, ideal, like, crew situation. At some point, you're going to join me and Sophia and, like, kick us down the trail. Yeah.
I mean, as long as I'm healthy and can get away for the weekend.
Okay.
With the kid and all. Hopefully, it'll work out. All right. But I'm planning on it. I want to join in on, and I'm thinking of pacing everyone if possible.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
So, like, start at mile 26 with someone. Run whoever gets there first.
Okay, so seriously, check out the crew bit, because like it says aid station number 2.
They change it?
I don't know.
Well, we'll look it up, but I'm gonna jump in probably the earliest point with whoever gets there first from the team, run to the next section that you can stop at.
That should be right.
And then I'm gonna wait until the next runner gets there from our team, and then just go all the way. So I might run 75 miles.
I like it.
I think it'd be fun.
That'll be great.
Really good training.
Aravaipa, what's up in Utah?
I'd be like, yeah, that'd be solid. So yeah, let us know what you guys thought about this episode. Yeah. A little bit different. We're talking about, we feel like there's not so many controversial topics that we can talk about every week, but that's the other thing we wanted to talk about was let us know what you guys want us to talk about in future shows.
There's something like uncomfortable that you don't think is being discussed within the ultra running world.
Yeah, we'll deep dive for 60 to 90 minutes. That's absolutely our goal. I know some people want us to talk about PED use and TUEs and all this stuff, which we need to
research. Yeah.
We want to research a little bit more so we can form some more opinions on that, but we will address it. We did get a response from Hard Rock.
Yeah.
From Blake Wood, who's on the board of directors and helped orchestrate the lottery. And he's a longtime Hard Rocker. I think he has the second most finishes. We're trying to get his permission to read his response and possibly even get our technology up to speed and maybe even have him on the show either as a call-in or a video in on this.
It would be awesome to talk to him.
We're also thinking about doing a listener Q&A episode. Yeah. Maybe even it might be part of the Hard Rock follow-up to the Ultra Lotteries one we did, / Q&A.
Yeah.
You guys could literally ask us anything and we will answer it.
Yeah, we'll go through it. We'll talk about it.
Lots of exciting stuff coming up. Next week, we're hoping to record an episode.
It's getting tight, though. Like, you're...
Well, we're getting pretty close. Next week or the week after, I'm going to be leaving for Barkley.
Yeah.
So, we're getting closer, so my time over the next couple weeks is going to be a little bit tighter as I kind of prep and pack and prepare. So hopefully we can record episodes the next 2 weeks before I leave for Hard Rock, but we'll just have to see. So thank you guys for...
Do we want to have a pre-Barkley discussion?
We might do a pre-Barkley episode. I was on the Ginger Runner Live last night, so you can go check that out. There was some viewer questions, but... I don't know. Maybe we'll do a Barkley prep. I want to keep the show true to the Trail Currents philosophy of things making waves. But I guess the Barkley's making waves, so we'll see. We'll see where we go with it. Anything else you want to add?
No, I'm good.
Please go check out Splat Sunscreen. Go support them on Kickstarter. We both did.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to... getting our packets of sunscreen. I know summer is just around the corner.
Pirate shirt. This was a... Oh, gosh, sorry.
So, before summer hits your area of the world, make sure you guys order some of that sunscreen, the sunscreen packets, and support what those guys are doing out there in the world. Good stuff. And I think that's it. We will talk to you guys in the next episode. Thank you for tuning in and listening.
See ya.